ओम नमो ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ भगवते वासुदेवाय सो हरे कृष्ण टुडे ऑन आवर फिफ्थ डे वी आर गोइंग थ्रू द फिफ्थ वर्स ऑफ द शिक्षाष्टकम प्रेयर्स As we have heard throughout the days, Shikshamrita is really a journey. And what you can find when Gauranga Mahaprabhu explains this his verses, there are always a few little verses in between. Krishna Chaitanya, you are looking for someone or a place, or if here is an ample opportunity for sitting, ample space, yes. A cushion, please, for Chaitanya. It is welcome. It is very interesting, and I feel important to read these little verses in between the actual Shikshastakam instructions to understand really what is going on inside Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he expresses these verses, and in this way understand a little bit. I think in English we would say from where he is coming, what is going on, and why he expresses this. So the fifth verse is spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in a mood of great humility. Ati dainye is the Bengali word. A great feeling of humility. Where he considers himself one of us, that means a conditioned soul of the material world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again expressed his desire to be endowed with service to the Lord. Again means in his Shikshamrita, he usually doesn't repeat himself. But now he expresses the same thing, the desire for bhakti, and for which means loving service, for the second time. It seems to be very much a burning issue for him. And in this mood, burning with a desire and a great humility, he expresses this verse, which some of our devotees have in our movement have said that's the most important verse for them from the Shikshastakam. So please, the verse must be there. Let us all chant it together. It's known to us, so we don't need to rehearse chanting it. Ayi nandatanuya kinkaram patitang mam vishame bhavam budho Kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadisham vichintaya. Once again. Ayi nandatanuya kinkaram patitang mam vishame bhavam budho Kripaya tava pada pankaja stita duli sadisham vichintaya. O my Lord, O Krishna, son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant. But because of my own fruitive acts, I have fallen in this horrible ocean of nations. Now, please be causelessly merciful to me. Consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. It's really a plea for mercy. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatyare Satarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Govaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu paints a very graphic picture before our eyes. The picture of an ocean which is agitated by the storm and now has waves. He says this is the world, a changing, fluid, stormy and agitated place. Now, in our perception, this world appears so solid, no? With a solid ground to walk on, a solid house to live in, solid trees who give us shade. It seems, even from the psychological point of view, so stale. That means everything happens again and again. We get up, we clean ourselves, we eventually eat, we do activities which tend to repeat themselves, like gardening or working or studying. Why, we might ask, does Gauranga Mahaprabhu talk of an ocean here? Is that a good analogy? Shouldn't he more give another analogy for the word? Well, analogies are given in order to make a specific point. No? If he would have wanted to make another point, he may have compared the world with a tree, like Krishna does in the beginning of the 15th chapter. But he wants to get at a certain point. That is, that it's dangerous here. Like it is dangerous when you are in a stormy ocean. And a little unpredictable. See, the Sanskrit word for this word is jagat. And jagat means moving, what moves. It is not quite correct that the world is only solid. On a different level, the atomic level, you will see a lot of movement going on. But this is not what Gauranga Mahaprabhu has in mind when he speaks of the world as an ocean, as being something which is moving, which is not fixed. It's a world of changes. And these changes, that's the part of it, are not under our control. they happen to us. We don't make them happen, but they happen to us in ways which is not controlled. Like when I came to Radhadish and I saw our talented Midanga player, Manu, he had something around his foot, and I asked, well, what has happened? And he told me of an accident which he had, which he certainly had not planned. It was not desired. This accident meant he couldn't walk any longer very nicely and experienced pain and so on. So this world, Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai, always throws things at us which we have not expected. What is the biggest thing which the world throws at us, which really in our consciousness we have not accepted, is, listen to this, it's death and birth. Really, no conditioned soul accepts the fact of death. It's something we just don't think about. Do you know that the only surest thing in your life is that you will die? I mean, that's 100% sure. You don't know if you will stay brahmachari or brahmacharini. You don't know if you will be rich or if you will be poor. You don't know how much happiness will come your way. You don't really know how much you will be able to progress in this lifetime on your path of Krishna consciousness. You don't really even know what will be today for breakfast. I mean, you can speculate by smelling, but that's not done really, because first it must be offered. You don't know what your 64 ounce day will be. I know it will be wonderful, but you don't know. I have to give some confident atmosphere, you know. But you do know that you have to die. This is what you really know. I don't. Maybe you will be angry at me that I say it early in the morning before breakfast, that I break such unpleasant news on an empty stomach. But you will have to accept this, you know. This is something sure. And it might not be as pleasant as you think it should be. I'm still internally a little bit very sad, really. I mean, because a long-term assistant in our team who really was a very important pillar and a wonderful devotee, wonderful, has just left the body in a way we couldn't expect. So you're sure you got the right thing, right? Yes. So. I just did my best to help, and we were really, all of us were changing shifts, and it was a 7-week long process, and we had so many things. We had to fly here and there, but all the time in the telephone and all, coming back and rushing to the hospital and all this. But when I saw it, I just was trying to be as helpful as possible. And when the moment of death happened, it was in this case it was a great relief for the devotee, and from one perspective, definitely the best. But you know, only a few days later, when you see the devotee for the last time in the open coffin before the coffin rolls into the furnace of the cremation institute, then you all of a sudden notice the devotee is gone. I had not accepted it really, And then it strikes you all of a sudden, like a mountain which falls from the sky, that you will also be in that cold coffin. And hopefully there will be devotees who will be chanting Hare Krishna at the time when you die, and who help you to move on without and cutting the last attachments and moving on, huh? So this is really something which we really will have to confront, my dear devotees. And it doesn't serve us if we just constantly suppress it or never think about it, like which is an unconscious tendency of our mind, a tendency which has also its justification, because listen to this: you will not die, but you will die 100%. You will never die. You will die 100%. It's a paradox. The way you know yourself and you act, that will die. But the way which you do not yet know yourself, the soul, will never die. No, it's a paradox. Everything you know, everything you have done, everything you have ever thought, you know, that will all become relativated at that moment. So it's not a safe place, really. As you know, in where I live, there is a forest, and some of the forests have a red or a white cross on some of the trees have a red and white or white cross on them. And what this cross means, I first didn't know, but I had to. I'm always so curious for everything. I had to find out. It means they are marked by the woodcutters to be cut down. All of you have an X like this on your head. You're already marked. It's sure, and the big cutter will come and cut you down. There is you are marked. I can see it. There is no one here in the room. Even the small children have already an X on it. It is not a fashionable X. Like I remember, there was a straight edge scene. Huh? They would put an X on their hand. No, it's a terrible X. And you didn't put that X on your forehead. If it would be up to you, you wouldn't have this mark. But you have it. Look in the mirror. No. For this X, you have to look at the hand. And please look inside the palm of your hand, and you will see there's a line going down from the thumb area. I mean, not from above the thumb. Do you know? In my case, there are two lines. Maybe you also have two lines. One of these lines, it's the one next to the thumb, is your life expectancy. I don't know if it's with you also. It ends. It doesn't go up to the shoulder for some reason. or then over the body and down into the ground. It ends. Does your line also end, or is it... it ends. Good. Then you are... Then this lecture is for you. Hare Krishna. So the devotee understands this, and he doesn't run away from it, and he begins to understand. I'm in the world of changes. The biggest change will be the change of body, but before that, there are, true to the changing nature of this jagat, many, many unexpected changes to be expected. And in this position, understanding the helplessness, that we really can't do anything against it. It's against the small and the big change. We have nothing in our possession. We can turn to nobody in this understanding. I'm a fallen soul in the ocean of material existence. The devotee turns his head upwards to Krishna. And he prays. you can see the mood of the devotee expressed in this beautiful piece of art which is there. There is this devotee drowning in the ocean of material life. The stormy waves have moved the ocean, and he is now raising his arms up, and he prays this verse, please save me. And bring me to the fixed position of safety. He wants to be one part of dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. This is a nice analogy as well. The pollen of the lotus, the red lotus, is always fixed and totally attached to the lotus flower. It's unremovable there. It is a fixed position. Only I think when there is some one here, the analogy doesn't fix or serve us entirely. But the idea is just like pollen is fixed to a lotus flower. It's a small thing of dust, you know, really a small. In the same way, the devotee wants to be, consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. The idea is a lotus feet. These are very nice feet. And whenever we hear of lotus feet, the implied understanding is, I mean, Lord Chaitanya could have said, please fix me as a flute in your hand or something. No, the desire of to be a small particle of pollen in the lotus feet means I know what my position is. I'm there. I'm on the lowest part of you, my Lord. This means I am your servant. Really, I come in a very humble door into your association, the service door. That's how I enter. And please let me be there, and let me be in a position of safety, an unremovable position, a position where I stay at your lotus feet in service. That's the mercy which the devotee in this world wants from Krishna, because he knows and he feels in his heart, my only connection with Krishna is through service. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami makes it very clear that everyone in the spiritual world, in the different relationships to Krishna, servant, friendship, parental, and confidential lover, they all are servants within this. They are not, they are overlording Krishna, but the underlying, let me say, deep devotional current in the heart of these devotees is that they serve Krishna. They do everything out of service for Krishna, what they do. No? So it is here where the Lord wants to be fixed in this relationship of service. My dear devotees, this is a very, very common that great devotees, in the moments of the deepest devotional expression, will ask for service of Krishna. Here is a verse for you from the 6th canto, 11th chapter, text 24, which in Prabhupada's words gives the sum and substance of devotional life. Would you like to hear this, the summary of devotional life? Good. Aham hai. One moment. This is so beautiful. Let me put my orchestra here. Aham hare tava Padaikamula Tasanudaso Bhavitasmi Buya Manasmaritasu Pate Gunangste Grinita Vakarma Karotukaya. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, will I again be able to be a servant of your eternal servants who find shelter only at your lotus feet? O Lord of my life, may I again become their servant so that my mind may always think of your transcendental attributes. May I become their servant so that my words always glorify those attributes and my body always engage in the loving service of your Lordship. Prabhupada explains, he really puts an emphasis on this shloka. It was spoken by the great soul Chitraketu before his ultimate return back home, back to Godhead. He spoke it in the body of Vritasura, which he left right after expressing his heart's desire. Prabhupada says, this verse gives the sum and substance of devotional life. One must first become a servant of the servant, of the servant of the Lord, Dasanudasa. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised, and he also showed by his own example, that a living entity should always desire to be a servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, the maintainer of the gopis. Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamala Yor Dasa Dasanudasa. You know, we want to become a servant of Krishna, but before doing this, let's become a servant of devotees. Let's learn to become a servant. And there is one question, really, which brings you into this position. And this question is here, it's like a secret point, but it's really the key point in this verse. It is there in one word. The question is very simple. Kinkaram. You know, please look at your Sanskrit there. Ayi nandatanuya kinkaram, kinkaram. King means, the syllable means what, and kara means to do. It means the servant will ask this question. Kinkaromi. What shall I do? Or in simple words, how can I serve you? And this is the question he asked his the Vaishnavas, his guru, and a question which he asked Krishna. How can I serve you? King Karomi, what's there for me to do? You know, in the material world, we asked, what's in for me? And in this, when we wake up to spiritual life, we ask, what's there for me to do? It's a different question. Sounds similar, but it is different. So I want to now go to a very deep subject. How, I don't know if this question has arisen in you already, because I do know too little about your own confidential thoughts in your spiritual life. But I guarantee you that the question which I will address now to you will appear at one time or another in your spiritual life. And the answer which you can give to this question will decide your further progress. If you have no answer to this question, it might be that you lose a little faith in the process. It's a question which is very deep, and which you may not even be aware of. It's something which bugs you, which moves you, which is inside. I will ask this question, make it very clear, and maybe you, as I draw out a question now, which comes, is bound to come up in every sadhaka, you might not recognize it immediately as your own question. But I can guarantee you, this question will come in your life. That is, listen very carefully, how will I ever go back to Krishna and find out my service? Is it really possible? And more poignantly, with more aiming now very sharp this question, how will I ever know who I am in the spiritual world? I mean, I hear I'm not the body. Thank you. I don't believe it as of yet, but my intelligence tells me better believe it. It's true. But who am I really? And how do I relate to Krishna? And further, will the Hare Krishna movement ever tell me this? How will this knowledge of who I really am awaken in my mind? Will it awaken in my mind? Up till now, I have no idea, really. I have no idea. It's very difficult for me to... Sometimes I hope that one day I will somehow serve Krishna in my original constitutional position as a Nitya Krishna Das or Krishna Dasi. But how will this happen, The question can... This is a very deep, a very direct question. It can be posed indirectly. Will I ever make enough advancement to go to Krishna? Or will Krishna ever take me? And how so? Will it happen? How will this happen? And, this was a question which I must be perfectly honest with you. A question which was really in my mind. Because... as I was once preaching, there was something which really moved me. After I had given a lecture, I received a postcard from one of the, you would say, the Kamis. What I want to express, the Nuka, it was the first time this person was at a lecture. This postcard was a postcard he had bought in the temple shop, and it says, "Do you know who you are?" And then the second line, "And can you tell me who I am? I would appreciate an answer." Now, of course, there are ways preachers can answer. It comes out. It's like it's there, like it is in like the tree is in the seed, and you water it, and then it comes out. And be a little patient. There are millions of ways you can answer and get away from this disturbing questions. But I didn't want to run away. No, I have no idea who I am. Really, absolutely no idea. Maybe a flower, I have no idea. Then I had, of course, a faith in our process. I like Krishna consciousness too much. In India, you say very much means too much in Indian English. I like too much, And I have, and Prabhupada had written me in my initiation letter, you are a very sincere boy and you will go back to Godhead after this life, you know. And I had faith in this. Somehow I like to believe such things. And why shouldn't I when it's in the letter from Srila Prabhupada, you know. So no problem. But I was curious, and this curiosity has not left me for a long time, until it became satisfied 10 years ago, in a very wonderful way, and so on. It's explained by one of our acharyas. And it really echoes what Prabhupada always tells us. It's when you become eager for Krishna consciousness, then you will receive knowledge about who you are in one of three ways. Through your spiritual master, or through a qualified sadhu, a good devotee, or the third way, it will be revealed from inside by the Antaryami. Do you know what this is, Antaryami? It's Krishna, Lord Paramatma in the heart, who will direct this. For us as Vaishnavas, we see Paramatma as Krishna, really, who's there. And this will be revealed when your heart is purified by practices like Nam Sankirtan. And you know, this is really the highest theology encapsulated in really something very hopeful. You do your Nam Sankirtan, which is the highest process here. This will purify your heart, and when this state is there, you will receive the knowledge in one of these three ways. It will be revealed, in other words, to you in one of these three ways. But you must first have purified the heart, because without heart purification, you can't understand anything. Without, you know, opening your eyes first, you can't see anything. So without removing the cover of avidya from the heart, if that is not removed, you can't see anything. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, here I will come to the end, in the second chapter of Bhajan Rahasya, tells us how this chanting will reveal everything. He says one should become mature on the basis of the first four verses, you know, give up offenses, give up attachments to the world, and so on. But then with the fifth verse, one should accept his spiritual body. This happens when you chant according to Mahaprabhu's instructions. You do Nam Sankirtan, and as you come to this point, Ayinanda Danuya, please save me from this. On the level, it's called attachment, ashakti. That's the level it represents. If you can do that with great attachment, if your heart is so much purified that you do this with ashakti, I'll call out, oh Krishna, save me. My God, the voice goes down. It is so moving for me to tell you about what our glorious future will be. You know, when you do this with attachment, at that moment it will be revealed. See, in the beginning, before that stage, it's called, the stage is Ruchi, you are attached to bhajan. You like chanting. You know, you think, oh, 64 rounds, that's really too little for me. I'm 120 round man, you know, or woman. And I'm aiming for Haridas Thakur's standard. You know, in Ruchi, you feel that bhajan, the process of devotional service, is so wonderful, you just like it, you know. And by Krishna's mercy, a little fraction of this ruchi is given even to us. You know, sometimes new devotees, they go like, what's up? You say, I just like it so much here. You know, they say, Krishna gives some taste so that they can go on, you know, without cigarettes, you know. They need some taste, some higher taste, you know. So the higher taste is given by Krishna, where you like this Krishna consciousness. But at another turning point we spoke yesterday, you will like the object of your worship, that is Krishna, more. He occupies all of your thoughts. And whatever you see, you are just reminded of Krishna. Like the little mother, when our Vishakha comes to the temple room, she and looks for her little girl, Mirabai. Mirabai is the name of the little, you know, that smiling girl, this beautiful small little Mirabai. You know, and she sees the shoes of Mirabai. Finally, I found her. I looked in the community hall. I looked in the apartment of her friends. I looked under the carpet. Nowhere was Mirabai. And now I came to the temple room, and she, look at this. It's a saintly lady, my Mirabai. Sees the little shoes there, and Mirabai is only in her head. So this is, but you would walk most properly over the shoes because you are in a hurry and you didn't see there was a microscopic small shoes, you know, for you. You wouldn't have seen. So a devotee who really develops ashakti or attachment to Krishna, he is so attached to Krishna that the thought of Krishna occupies him so much, and as a result of this, his own natural constitutional position. Constitution means what's always there, you know, what is in even if it's not visible at the moment, it's there. It's your constitution. It's something which doesn't change. That will come forth, that constitutional position, and it will be revealed in some ways who you precisely are and how you relate to Krishna. Are you meant to carry his things after him like the servants do, or are you in another way relating to Krishna? That will be revealed. So this all comes out, this is my point here, through Naam, through the mercy of the holy name, which purifies and prepares your heart so that this type of knowledge, who are you in relationship to Krishna, can be revealed. I'm your eternal servant. You will know what that means, a servant. Who are you as a servant? I have fallen into this horrible ocean. It's really dangerous here. Now please be causelessly merciful and lift me up again. Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. My dear devotees, if you can chant in this mood, your chanting is a success. If you think, here I'm very, very comfortable, totally all right here, I'm fine here, and no need to change anything as long as there's pizza and so on. That is not the right position. Someone who wants to keep things as they are is not really, will not come to these wonderful moods in Krishna consciousness. Having said this, I want to welcome you today in a visible way to yours. I first have to decorate myself. This you could have. I want to welcome you for your 64-round stay. Maybe you noticed the beads here. This is a time dedicated to your japa. It is a wonderful day. It's a day off, a holiday from every other requirement in your life. It is something where you can turn into a sincerely calling out for Krishna. In the mood of today, please accept me as your servant again. At the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the requirement which Gauranga Mahaprabhu made to each one of his devotees was chant one leg. You know, in Puri, leg means 100,000 names, which comes down to 64 rounds. In Puri, there were many invitations by brahmanas which came to the house of Gauranga Mahaprabhu or to the place, the Gambira, and Swarup Damodar had to make the list of for the months of where Mahaprabhu would go at which time. So-and-so brahmana on Monday, so-and-so brahmana on Tuesday, this invitation for Wednesday. But there were more invitations than days in the months, naturally. I mean, imagine you would have been there and Gauranga Mahaprabhu would be there. You would have invited him to your, and you would have cooked the whole day and the night before to, and so on. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Swarup Damodar, I will only go to a man who has 100,000. And this news came out, and the brahmanas went, what, 100,000? It meant at that time, like in when you say someone is a millionaire, you don't think he is a millionaire in sweets, you think he's a millionaire in euros, naturally. So when Lord Chaitanya said he is a 100,000 Lakeshwara, everyone thought, well, he means I have 100,000 conch shells in my possession. That was the currency at that time, little conch shells, you know. I'm rich, but they were all poor like you. So everyone thought, I'm disqualified, and were very, very sad. And the news came back to Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu just laughed and he said, I didn't mean they have to be rich in money, they have to be rich in chanting Hare Krishna. They should all have 64 rounds. I will not accept the offerings of someone who doesn't chant one lakh of names a day. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta so this was the standard for a long, long time, up to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He would say, if someone does not chant 64 rounds a day, he might be overwhelmed with material desires. Do you have sometimes material desires? That could mean it's because you don't chant 64 rounds a day. Mukunda Maharaj remembers, it is in one of his Vyasa Puja offerings, that Prabhupada in the beginning of the movement had the same standard. Mukunda Maharaj came in his room for a little personal darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said to him, who's Krishna? He asked him. Mukunda Maharaj said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what are you in relationship? I'm the Krishna servant, God. He said, Prabhupada, you will be initiated, chant 64 rounds a day. Mukunda Maharaj looked at Prabhupada. It didn't know what to say. He had difficulty. I mean, it was not easy for him to chant so many rounds, even 16. And now Prabhupada wanted to give him an initiation, and it meant an upgrade in the rounds, 64 rounds. He didn't even know if there was a need to say anything. He was just... Then Prabhupada looked at him and he said, okay, 32 rounds. Still, astonishment. Okay, said Prabhupada. 16 rounds, but not less. This is how it came to 16 rounds. And Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says, Westerners are a little restless. They can't sit for so long. They are a little active by nature, so they have to be engaged in devotional service. But throughout his teaching period, when Prabhupada was asked about 64 rounds, he said, who stops you from chanting? Gaurahari wants to eat. he says, stop. I'm hungry. Hare Krishna. Little humor is necessary sometimes. A time is also there, as I notice. So I will now go. So today we will come to the standard of the Hare Krishna movement. We will come to the standard which Gauranga Mahaprabhu gave, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave, and we will come to the standard which is implied in the word Kirtaniya Sadahari, always chanting. Sada. Sada means always. In Yugoslavian language it means now, but that's in Sanskrit it means always, not just for a moment. We should chant. Huh? This is... I wanted to provocate you a little bit. The standard of the Hare Krishna movement is 16 rounds. And and please, everyone who take notice of this, I don't want to bring a new standard. Prabhupada's standard is 16 rounds. But I want to say when that Prabhupada gave this for a reason, he encouraged us throughout to always chant Hare Krishna, either in japa or in kirtan, so on. But you have to now be very careful with these 64 rounds day, and here I will end. My dear devotees, I really mean this very seriously now. I think many of you can very easily do it. But some of you understand, if you have not chanted many rounds, if you don't chant 16 rounds regularly because you're not initiated or you know, then if you come while you chant into this mood and you feel exist and you feel problems and you feel just struggle, you know, make a pause, read a little. Don't make it a burden. A graha. Graha, as far as I understand, means burden. There was this one Vaishnava king who was almost like one of these well-meaning but not well-trained Gurukul teachers in the past. He made it a rule that in his kingdom, everyone should chant 64 rounds, you know. And he had police people going undercover, you know, and inspecting people if they would finish their 64 rounds. Now just imagine a farmer. It's summer. He has to get up early because the sun is up early, irrigate his fields, be all day with the fields, and then comes home and there are maybe 48 rounds left. How enthusiastic he will be to chant. He's tired. He could fall asleep, you know, while he stands up, you know. He is, and now 48 rounds. Congratulations. And how would he experience his rounds? He would experience his rounds as a graha, a burden. So, don't create in your mind a feeling that chanting the holy name is a burden. And therefore, pace yourself, be gentle with yourself, and you will see miracles unfold. But at the same time, be focused. And I think really 64 ounces, for those who do this regularly, there are a few even in this room who chant. It's nothing. Nishta. It's like breathing, you know. Breathing, do you say, oh, too many breaths a day, you know, so really, I don't know, 20 million breaths, or not, I don't know, how many breaths, I don't know, 20,000, I don't know, but it's a lot of breathing, you know. Oh, too much, no, more, it's good, required, it's good for health, it's natural. So as you chant, it will become as natural as breathing. And today, please, try to go for it, but if you are a beginner in your chanting practice, and you should feel at some time that you're getting tired and moody and mental and so on, what you do is you cut this thing which makes you mental and moody, and that's the stress which you make yourself. You throw the stress out. But every one of you, please, I request you sincerely, chant more rounds than you usually chant, huh? Every one of you. Exactly how we will do this and arrange our day will be told to you at 10 o'clock sharp in the community hall, and that's why I will now follow Gaurahari's very nice reminder. He is a very sensitive person. It was necessary that you gave me the note, and I know you will fast today, and so on. Have to be careful with your team, you know. please have your breakfast, and I see you at 10 o'clock in a good spirit in the community hall. Hare Krishna.